Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Dr. Meg Meeker, along with your host, psychologist and best-selling author, Dr. James Dobson.
Well, Dr. Meeker, I appreciate the opportunity to work with you again here on a very, very important topic. I want to go back to 1985 when I was appointed to the Attorney General's Commission on Obscenity and Pornography, and we came to the conclusion after 18 of the most difficult, miserable, horrible months, I think, of my life, studying things that just were sickening day after day, that this stuff is truly toxic. And it has major implications for the society and for the culture at large. And on the last day of that commission, we issued a 2,000-page report that did not whitewash it at all. And there was big discussion of whether we should give a little 40-page report that just didn't say much of anything, or this 2,000-page report. We went for the big one, and it had a major impact throughout the country. It made recommendations for 26 changes in the law, and every one of them was made by Congress in the term that followed. And so it was very successful for reasons that I'm sorry to tell you, that has changed, and we're probably in worse shape now than we were back in 1985. But Patrick Truman became my friend at that time, and he was in the Department of Justice, and we were talking about a lot of these things that were going on in the commission. And he became chief of the criminal division of the Child Exploitation and Obscenity Section within the Department of Justice. So he's been right in the middle of this, at least from those early days. Mr. Truman is now the president and CEO of Morality in Media, and I am delighted to have him here. We're going to talk about some old times today, but it's highly relevant to today. And Patrick, it is a pleasure to have you here. I've followed your career. You are a good man, and it's an honor that you've come to be with us.
Well, it's an honor to be with you, Jim, and Dr. Meeker. And of course, Jim, we go back many, many years. You, for so long, were the leading voice on the issue of pornography and not only helped so many individuals, but helped turn around this whole cultural phenomenon where pornography was overtaking us many years ago in the 80s, and I had the privilege of being part of this effort to try to stamp it out, and we were successful. And then the internet came along. And now I have
then Bill Clinton
Bill came Clinton along. Came along, and his office hardly prosecuted pornographers. You know that in the years that in the Reagan administration and the Bush administration, I think we had 120 convictions on pornography, never lost a trial. Because when you get in a criminal trial, you know, the jury has to see some of this pornography, and you ask them, does this violate your community standards? Everybody says it does, even if they like pornography. They have to say, this is beyond the pale. Yeah. Well, we could do that today, but you find the justice—
We don't have the will to do it.
We don't have the will to do it. But I think, Jim, shows just like this, and with your influence, people will begin to wake up, wait a minute, those laws are still on the books, so why are my children being harmed? Why is my husband being harmed? We could wipe this all out if we had the will.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Dobson, I was curious, in your opening you were talking about 1985 and how things have changed so much from then. Can you tell our listeners specifically what's changed? Because if the laws haven't changed, is the big difference now the fact that we have the internet and we're not enforcing laws, or has anything else changed?
Well, it's twofold, and I want you to weigh in on this too, Patrick. But the laws are, I suppose, still on the books, but the Department of Justice has no interest at all in prosecuting anybody. And so the pornographers are making gigantic amounts of money because they have a free rein. And Bill Clinton, as I said, the president, told the Justice Department to take their hands off. And now, of course, in the present administration, there is no will to do it. So these guys have an opportunity to put the most wretched stuff you can imagine out there before the public. And child pornography has flourished too, hasn't it, Beth?
It's flourished because if you don't prosecute adult pornography, then it's adult pornography is all over, and guys will begin looking at pornography. And you know how the brain works. It wants more and harder material to maintain that excitement. And so they go to more deviance, and eventually many go to child pornography. And if you look at a chart of child pornography from the beginning of the internet till now, it's like a hockey stick. It just takes off. And if you want to stop child pornography, you can't just go after child pornography. We're pouring millions into it every year. You have to also go after adult pornography. And as I said, the laws are still on the books. It's a violation of federal law to distribute hardcore pornography, or what we call obscenity, on the internet. Yet it's all over. And it's a violation of federal law to distribute hardcore pornography on cable or satellite television. Yet Verizon, Comcast, DirecTV, they all have it. It's a violation of federal law even to be in the retail distribution business of selling hardcore pornography. Any porn shop in America could be put out of business.
Yeah, you know, you're describing how pornography works on the brain, and there are chemical reasons for this. But it moves. It moves progressively. It is progressive and addictive. So what excites a person, especially a man, at one time will not be enough several weeks later. And it has to get more hardcore and more violent and more explicit. And the person is being marched toward the end point where you've seen everything a man and a woman can do together. You can see it in varieties, but you come to the point where you've seen it all. What happens then? For a percentage of people, usually men again, a percentage of them will jump that little fire trail over to the paraphilias, which means abnormal stuff, and you move through violent pornography, homosexual pornography, child pornography, bestiality, the sex with animals, killing children. I mean, whenever you see something in the newspaper about a child who's been abducted and killed, I guarantee you that man has pornography in his house or garage or in his life. It is inevitable, and the media will not tell people that.
It's interesting, as you're saying this, Dr. Dobson, and of course you know how the brain works, just what you describe is exactly what's happening. I have the feeling that so many of your listeners are saying, oh, that's what happened to my husband.
Yeah.
That's what happened to my son.
Yeah. Meg, go ahead.
You know, as a pediatrician, I'll tell you, this is really, really hard to listen to. And I know it's hard for our listeners to listen to as well. But, you know, you're absolutely right. One of my deep concerns is for our young boys out there, because these boys are so easily addicted to screens, you know, whether it's video games or, you know, whatever. And so the allure, the visual, I think that often parents underestimate how strong that visual pull is for many of their young boys, 9, 10, 11 years old, to look at a screen. And we're talking about hardcore, horrible porn, but look at even some of the video games, Grand Theft Auto. There's rape in there. And these are the commonly accepted, quote-unquote, fun games that boys will play. So I think that desensitization towards pornography starts even at a, quote-unquote, sort of innocent level with many of the video games.
It's my belief that at about age 13 for boys, pornography is more addictive than cocaine. One exposure, and many of them, if they're especially vulnerable to it, will become hooked on it. I mean, it is an addiction. You just try getting over it. You try curing it, and you'll find out just how addictive it is. And so you have a kid at a vulnerable age. He's 13 years, 14 years of age, and he gets into this stuff, and it becomes a lifelong pattern. And it destroys them. It interferes with marriage. I mean, there is nothing that a man and woman can experience in marriage that can compete in some ways with the airbrushed nudity and sexuality that is available on any internet source. It is amazing how damaging this is. And men and women don't see this the same way. And it appeals to men more than women, at least this kind of visual response. And they fight over it. It affects them sexually, and they divorce, and they write us. And the woman is the one that says, it destroyed my marriage. Mm-hmm.
Jim, that's so right. And the way people consume pornography today is different than, of course, years ago. The first image of pornography I saw was in a bus station. Some kid in our basketball team held up the centerfold of a Playboy magazine when their parents weren't looking, and it was across the room. That was all I saw. Now, I couldn't see it after that because there's no means to get it. But these kids are getting it in their home computer, and then when they get it, they're not just looking at one image, because as you begin looking, other images pop up, and you just go from, you know, 0 to 60, as they say, in a couple seconds. So they consume more pornography in a sitting than maybe most adults alive today would have seen in a lifetime. Mm.
Meg, as a pediatrician, are you seeing this in your practice? Do you see 14, 15-year-old boys that are addicted to this stuff?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And it breaks my heart. And I will say it can even start younger than that because, you know, even the 11 and 12-year-old boys. And here's one of the things that really concerns me is that many times boys aren't out looking for it. They're looking for something else on their computer. But a lot of the pornography industry has figured out a way to intercede and to get in between, you know, certain sites. So that, for instance, if a boy is looking for a specific music site, on the way to that music site, porn will pop up. Yeah. So, you know, many times, and I don't know, you know, if it's 50%, whatever, but many times these boys aren't looking for it. It just happens on them. It lands in their lap. And I think that parents don't realize how easily their boys are being preyed on.
I want to say a word about that, that we hear from so many parents about a story just like that. My kid wasn't looking at porn. It popped up, and then he looked at it and went from there. What happens in so many families is dad is looking at porn. Mm. And because dad's looking at porn and searching through Google, for example, Google remembers that and brings up various advertisements from the companies that are advertising on Google with certain words that'll fit into what dad's been looking at. So dad leaves the computer, wipes the history clean, thinks I'm okay. But Google remembers that. And so the boy or the wife sits down and begins looking, and you get the pop-ups.
And you know what else happens in the way of memory is that it gets locked into the brain. When you have seen an image that is particularly attractive to you, epinephrine is released in the brain, a substance in the brain, and it stamps that image into the brain. Yeah. And that will be with that individual sometimes for the rest of his life. I mean, it is just amazing how damaging this is. And Pat, I'd like you to talk about the indignity of obscenity and what it does not just to the woman that is depicted, but to all women, because it insults their sense of decency to have those images out there.
Yes, and Jim, as you're saying that, I'm thinking about there's so many research studies. Now, we aggregate these studies on a site called pornharmsresearch.com. But the studies show that the more you consume pornography, the more you'll believe the rape myth. That is, that women enjoy rape or that they...
they act like they don't want it.
Yes,
but they're hiding the fact that they do.
Yeah, they believe this, and it develops what Dr. Marianne Layton of the University of Pennsylvania calls permission giving beliefs. So the guy believes, gee, I watch a lot of violence on porn, so my girlfriend, my wife, must enjoy violence just like the porn star. Yeah. So they, you know, exert that. So what it does to the individual who's consuming this is change their mindset into the mindset of a pornographer. They develop the values of a pornographer. And so how they look at women is far different than what God's intent on how we look at women. It tears down their inhibitions. And women are at risk in society because of this. We know, for example, and the studies show this, that the more you consume pornography, the more likely you are, four times more likely, to visit a prostitute. Pornography leads to prostitution. It creates demand. And it also, therefore, creates demand for sexually trafficked victims. So it just changes the person, as you described, with their brain, and they're not the same one.
Mm. Well, there are so many damaging aspects of the pornography industry and what they're doing. Dr. Meeker, what you just said about kids stumbling onto it. I mean, we're talking 6, 7, 8-year-olds.
Yeah.
Who all of a sudden, there it is. And I mean, going all the way back to the early psychologists and psychiatrists, Sigmund Freud said that children should be protected from adult sexuality. It's not a good thing. And we've now come to the point where that's no longer a taboo either. And we don't seem to be concerned. I mean, I want to say to the parents who are out there, have you ever fought this stuff? Have you ever let your wishes and desires be known? Do you know that your children are at risk? Do you know that you may be sacrificing a meaningful sexual relationship in marriage by what you're allowing to be done? I'm not blaming it on the parents, but I'm telling you, trying to mobilize people to fight this stuff is very difficult. It's very difficult.
It is very difficult. And I think that, you know, if you think about children sitting in front of a computer screen, and we think of exposure to adult sexuality, so much of what they see isn't healthy adult sexuality. And yes, boys will be sexually aroused, but with that as well is a trauma that gets, you know, ingrained into their mind as well, because we know that hardwiring is going on during those teen years. And it really traumatizes kids over and over, and it's going to really distort, confuse their sexual identity, their sexuality. And that is such a huge part of an adolescent man. And I really believe when you break the sexuality of a young boy or a young man, you can take the man down. And so I really think this, it's that serious.
You know, when you were talking earlier, Jim, about what this does to the young men, it seems to me there was a story right out here in Colorado last year. I believe it was a suburb of Denver, where a girl, about an 11-year-old girl going to school, used to meet her friends at the park, and the four of them would walk to school. And she was missing one day, and as they did this search for her, the mother of a 17-year-old boy turned him in because she believed that he could have been the perpetrator. And the reason she believed he was the perpetrator is because he was in addiction therapy, for pornography addiction, for 2 years. And sure enough, they found the girl, and he confessed she had been sexually molested, murdered, and dismembered. Now, tell me this. Does a boy, 17-year-old boy, come up with a thought to commit that heinous crime without the trauma of pornography?
You know, many people think that we're opposed to pornography when it really is a victimless crime or a victimless activity. And they think of it as airbrushed nudity and Playboy magazine, maybe one from 20 years ago. They don't have any idea how awful this stuff really is. Someone asked me, what effect did being on the Pornography Commission have on me?
Yes.
And I said, well, you know, the stuff that we were seeing was not attractive to me at all. That does not attract a normal person, so it did not have that kind of effect on it. It just made me want to throw up.
But if you had been looking at pornography for many years, looking for the novelty, something like that becomes attractive. It's just it's overwhelming, and the human mind cannot cope with it, I don't think.
Let me share something in conclusion here on this day. We want to talk about it some more. But some of our listeners who have been listening to me for a long, long time will recognize these details. But that 2,000-page report that I talked about earlier was read by Ted Bundy in prison on death row, and he recognized himself in those pages.
Mass murderer.
A mass murderer. Ted Bundy killed at least 28 women and girls, and the evidence is that it may have been more than 100. He couldn't remember the others, and as he was about to be executed, he gave evidence. He felt that the people he had harmed, the families and the parents, should know what happened, and so he spent all day describing these things, and he couldn't remember them all. But because he read that commission report and saw my name in it, he began to have a great sense of guilt and a feeling of responsibility for what he had done to others and the role that pornography had played in it. So one of his lawyers contacted me on behalf of Ted Bundy and said that when it came time for him to be executed, because by then he knew he had lost, he wanted to talk to me about it. And so I agreed to do that, and it took 2 more years of the legal process to play out. And I flew down to Florida to talk to him the night before he was executed. And he would not talk to anybody else because he knew they would distort the story. And there were 300 reporters down there when I got there, and I was the only one that talked to him. And we did it on video. It exists to this day. But it was one of the most difficult and emotional experiences I've ever had. And I sat and talked to Ted for 45 minutes on camera. And he said to me, I'm not blaming pornography because I'm responsible for what I did. But I am telling you that pornography played a role in it. And he said he had been at a city dump, and found detective stories, by today's standards, very mild, and that he had seen things there that stimulated him, and he got hooked on it. And he said from there it progressed to harder and harder material until he came to the fire trail. And then he jumped it, and he began wanting to experience it personally, not just see pictures of it. And he started killing women. And I'm telling you, this is a cancer on society. Mm-hmm. It is a cancer. I know other people. I've talked to others on death row who had the same experience. But when we released our report, would you believe the media made me the subject? Dobson is just on his own campaign, and they did everything they could to keep that from having an impact on the culture.
You know, there's now, Jim, since that time, so much research on the harms of pornography that we're winning over some of the left and some of the people you wouldn't expect because they're parents and because they can read research. But wouldn't you think that by now the other side would be able to come up with a study, just one study, that shows the benefits of pornography?
Now, why would they do that?
Yeah.
Because that is their bias. They, I think the media is afraid of censorship, and so they fight it because they don't want anything limiting their freedom to do what they want.
To do whatever they want.
Dr. Meeker, I want to hear more from you on this subject, and we're going to start the program tomorrow by asking for your experience and your recommendations, especially to parents who have a child that they realize is in trouble. Maybe they've found pornography in the bedroom and they don't know what to do about it. Let's talk about that next time. And Patrick Truman, my great friend, you'll be back with us as well, won't you?
Honored. Thank you.
Now, I also want to talk about what you're doing about this, okay?
Thank you.
All right.
Great.
I'm sorry. I want to say to our listeners out there, I'm sorry for putting you through this today. But should we not talk about it? Should we not make you aware of the dangers to your kids and to your husband? And women get hooked on a different kind of pornography. We'll talk about that tomorrow, too. Thank you, and you all be with us next time.
Thank you. And if you'd like more information about Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk, or to find links to the many resources and websites mentioned on today's program, visit our website at drjamesdobson.org. Thank you for joining us today. We'll see you again next time for the conclusion of our conversation with Patrick Truman on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Family Talk is not affiliated with Focus on the Family.